Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome to the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, how did week three treat you?
Very well, very well. I think we're getting a better feel for these teams. My week's already a little disjointed because the Steelers played Monday night, so I didn't have my show yesterday, and today's kind of like a Monday for me and my Steeler week, which is odd, but yeah, that's the way it works. I adapt and overcome.
Yeah, I actually hesitated there, whether it was week three that just wrapped up or week two, so it's we're just a couple weeks in, a few weeks in, I guess I should say, and it's already running together for me. I don't know if that's probably not a good thing. Matt, we've got a great guest on today with us. We've got Dan Sanio. Dan is a writer over at DLF alongside me. He's also one of the co-hosts of the Dynasty Tradecast and the Dynasty Double Take, both of those with Nathan Powell. Dan, you're earning your wings here. How do you put up with Nathan so much?
It can be a real struggle, man. we went out and got him one of those new Yeti mics. And ever since then, his takes are a little bit easier to bear because I can actually hear them clearly. So, it's great to be on, guys. It's fun to work with Nathan. I'm really happy to be here with both of you guys.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. Along with all those things I just mentioned, the other thing that you're doing this season, and I don't know, maybe you did this last season as well, and I just missed it. But basically, a quick recap of every game from a dynasty perspective, which I love because once we get in season, it seems like everybody's perspective kind of shifts to winning the week and basically a short-term outlook. So we try to keep it dynasty focused on here. I know you guys do on the Tradecast as well. And I love that that's your perspective on that recap that you share on Twitter. So tell us a little bit more about that, kind of what pushed you to do that and anything else you want to share.
Yeah, so I mean, you see a lot of those recaps with the season-long guys, and even in DFS, you see it. And we don't really have that in Dynasty. I know you guys are kind of doing something similar on the blueprint here. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think once we're in season, it's really hard to find things that are truly actionable. Those are the kind of things that we kind of lean towards on the Tradecast as well. But as far as the weekly recap, I think it's just nice to keep it in people's minds, just short little blips. People that can focus on games, you know, whether the outcome is involved or any production is involved. I think it's just nice to be able to see from whatever standpoint you want to look at it. It's nice to be able to see how to kind of value players. I try my best to keep any personal biases out. There's some players that I still will forever, you know, lean on in one direction or the other, but I do my best to kind of roll with how everything's going this season, how it looks for the future, because we are playing this wonderful game of Dynasty. But I don't like to hinder too much on the short term unless we're talking about older players and buying for contenders.
Yeah, and you compared it to what we're doing here. I think it really is just a Twitter version because we're talking each week. This will be the third week now that we've done this, but we talk about players to buy, sell, add, or drop, or really a rank, I guess. So really just all the changing value of these players, and that's what you hit on as well.
Yeah, so I think it's just really nice. Like I said, it's nice to have something that's actionable, something that people can kind of go out and actually try themselves, whether it's buying a player, doing something with their rosters, or even just kind of shopping the market. You know, sometimes that's nice to just be able to see, get an idea of what you should be looking for in return for one of your assets or what you should be looking to spend to get an asset you may be interested in.
All right, well, let's get to it today. Again, for those who maybe have missed the past couple episodes, this is kind of our format that we're going to roll with for Matt. I think we're going to do this all regular season.
I'm liking it
so far. Basically, we are going to recap each game with a focus really on one or two players. I'll give the guys a scenario that someone might be considering in a dynasty league. And as I already said, maybe that's buying or selling a player, adding a player off the waiver wire, dropping a player from your team, or adjusting your dynasty rankings based on the latest news, the latest on-field performance from these players. And guys, what I want you all to do is just classify that move as either a reaction or maybe an overreaction. And again, that comes from our buddy Dwayne Brown, who mentioned that a lot in the preseason, that he wanted to react without overreacting. We'll see what you guys think about some of the moves I have in mind based on these games from week three. Let's start with the Browns and the Jets. I think that was obviously one of the big stories from week three, but I guess because it was on Thursday night, by the time Sunday rolled around, we'd kind of forgotten about it. Of course, the Browns finally got a win. We saw the debut of Baker Mayfield after the injury to Tyrod Taylor. And Mayfield was impressive. 201 yards, didn't throw any touchdowns, but as I said, the W that he got was the most important stat from the night. And of course, as expected, Twitter went crazy. The Dynasty community went crazy for Mayfield immediately. I'm going to adjust my rankings, and I'm moving Baker Mayfield into my top 12 Dynasty rankings at the quarterback position. Is that an appropriate reaction, or is that an overreaction? Dan, I already know your answer because I did read your timeline, but go ahead and share with our listeners what you think.
Yeah, as you mentioned, that was kind of the leadoff point for my Twitter thread as well. I've got Baker up in the top six or eight. I had him pretty close to a quarterback one to start with, but now that we see him actually out there performing and just flinging that ball all around the place, man, he had so much heat on every single one of those passes. And the only thing I saw that I kind of expected and didn't love was that he was just a little bit late on everything. But how are you not going to be late on everything when you're getting no first team reps, right? So I think that was really the only thing that I saw that maybe would be improved upon, but I loved every last bit of it. I think top six or eight in Dynasty. You know, you talk about the age and you talk about the team around him now. They've got the weapons to really be consistent and to be explosive for the next at least few years.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. So Dan, obviously you think that is an appropriate reaction. You like that move and maybe would even be more aggressive. I have to be honest, when I saw your top six to eight ranking, and I've seen similar opinion from a couple other people, I thought that was a bit aggressive. And then I looked at my own rankings, and I think most of us would agree, Rodgers and Wentz and Mahomes, Watson, Wilson, Cam Newton, those guys are probably safely ahead of him. That's six guys. And after that, I think it's pretty wide open. You can make a case that he's above basically everybody else. So maybe seven is kind of where we can start talking. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, it's funny because I did the same thing. I read this question and I'm like, man, McDowell's nuts. No way. He's not top 12. There's so many quarterbacks. So I pulled up my list, which I haven't updated in a while. And I'm like, well, some of these guys I had kind of high, Mariota, Winston, Jimmy, I'll take him over all those guys right now.
Yeah.
So I moved them up to eight, you know, those six you mentioned, and I kept Luck ahead of them, which I know is a little risky. But I guess you could make the argument of Mayfield versus Goff, Stafford, Ryan. But Stafford and Ryan are up in age. So, yeah, I mean, I have him at eight pretty firmly. And just one last thing I want to throw in, as you mentioned, he does have good weapons. You know, Callaway's stock is rising quickly. And I could absolutely see them spending a premium pick or another free agent big buck on a wideout next offseason.
Yeah, so Dan, I thought you were crazy, but maybe not so much. We all agree that's an appropriate reaction. Certainly within the top 12, that's actually where I have him ranked now. But Matt, like you, I'm due for an update. Garoppolo's still above him, and a couple other guys still above him that'll be changing. So yeah, anywhere in that 7, 8, 9 range seems pretty realistic at this point. Let's move on. Next game, Saints and Falcons, a shootout that had a lot of fantasy goodness for us, as those two teams always do. Michael Thomas did it again, 10 targets, 10 catches, 129 yards. He's seen 40 targets on the season. He's caught 38 of them. He's the wide receiver one in fantasy pretty easily right now. And I want to go buy him. I don't know if that's really a smart idea to buy that high, but I'm going to do it. And I'm going to give Julio Jones, who also played in this game, of course, and a future first rounder for Michael Thomas, buying back some years, maybe even getting an increase in production not just in the early going, but maybe the whole year. Matt, is this an appropriate reaction or an overreaction?
Appropriate. I went to Thomas' side here. I mean, unless Drew Brees only gives us 1 year and bails out, I mean, they just pepper him with targets. The scheme's tremendous. It's not like he's a one-year wonder. I mean, he's already setting records for productivity throughout his young career. He's a fantasy superstar.
Dan, what do you think?
I think, honestly, if anything, it might be a bit of an underreaction. Just thinking about market and how a lot of the youth-driven folks feel about Julio Jones. And again, he's been really good this year, like he always is. But that little thing in the back of my mind always kind of sticks with guys like Kelvin Johnson, who, even though they're elite, right around 30, they start to kind of break down a little bit and maybe lose some interest. Now, Detroit probably had a little bit of that to do with it, but I don't know that you can get Michael Thomas for Julio in a first. If that's available to you, I'm making that trade every day of the week. I think Michael Thomas is absolutely a top three wideout. I don't think having Drew Brees is going to hold him. Not having Drew Brees is going to hold him back. I think he's quarterback proof in my eyes. He's proven day in and day out that he can kind of win on every single level. So I think you might have to add to that, but yeah, if that's available, it's an appropriate reaction or possibly an underreaction.
All right.
You know what? If you think about it through the Thomas's owner's eyes, you know, usually these kind of deals are, well, if he's a contender, maybe, but you're losing for this year too. You know, I mean, is a first round pick enough for the age gap and the lesser production for now? I don't think it is.
I'll say, I think if that first projects as a top three and you're going to guarantee yourself one of those top wide receivers in the 2019 class, I think it becomes close, because I think that class can bridge that gap pretty easily. Now, if this is just kind of a random first or potentially a mid or late, I don't think it's going to have the same upside as it would just, you know, being Michael Thomas or whatever it happens to be. So I think that first would have to be early for me to just do the Julio in a first.
Yeah, I think this is our first underreaction, but it's probably fair in this situation. Let's stick with Thomas and dig a little deeper then. I've seen the opinion that Thomas should be the wide receiver one in Dynasty. Of course, that means ranking him above Odell Beckham, above DeAndre Hopkins, and anybody else that you might like at the top of the rankings. Would that be an overreaction?
I don't think so. I think honestly, right now it's a 1A, 1B, 1C. Odell, DeAndre Hopkins, and Michael Thomas, I think, all have a say at that top position. I think Odell is the most explosive. I think DeAndre Hopkins is the most sure-handed of the crew. And I think Michael Thomas is just really good at everything. I don't think he's elite at any one thing. So I think maybe that puts him the 1C for me. I love Odell's explosiveness. I'm always forever a nuke guy, as I'm sure you've probably seen that on my Twitter as well. DeAndre will forever be my wide receiver one.
To me, Odell's the best player, but his quarterback situation's the worst for now and for Dynasty. You know, like, he could have a rookie quarterback thrown to him next year. Hopkins has probably the best one long-term, and Thomas definitely is the best one short term.
Yeah, I think we may be getting to the point, especially when you start factoring in the quarterback situation, it may actually be hardest to make a case for Beckham as the wide receiver one between the three of them. Let's stick with this game. We did this last week with our big Chiefs Steelers game, I believe it was. We've got to have a second one here, because this game also featured a huge breakout performance from Falcons rookie Calvin Ridley. 7 catches, 146 yards, 3 touchdowns. He was the wide receiver one for the week. And this is an actual scenario that somebody brought to me, so I'm going to throw it out there. I'm going to buy Calvin Ridley for 2 2019 first round picks. Dan, overreaction?
Yeah, for me that's a pretty big overreaction. I mean, we saw Ridley excel in space. We saw him run super crisp routes. We know that's his forte. Now they're going to pull somebody off of Julio where they were originally doubling him, they're going to make sure that Ridley's pressed at the line. I would imagine, I'm no defensive coordinator, but I would imagine that's how you stop this man. But two firsts, when you just paid a late, I get it. You know, things move fast. I would say mid first. I'm not going to dabble with those top three. His landing spot is obviously great because Matt Ryan, he's got a great counterpart in Julio. I think it's a moderately fluky breakout game because he was pretty much running free the entire time.
Totally agree. I want the picks. I like Ridley. I like his situation. I have a hard time believing, though, that a year for, you know, after the season, we would trade him for or that anyone would trade a top five rookie pick for him straight up. You know, I mean, he's still not going to be the number one on his team. I don't think he's the next Juju. You know, I mean, I think he's a good player. I think he's a wide receiver three.
All right. I agree with you guys. That one was going just a little too far.
Hey, before we move on, I want to tell everyone about SquadQL. If you've been listening the last couple weeks, hopefully you've already jumped on this product. It's wonderful. But if you want an unfair advantage to dominate your fantasy football league, which obviously you do or you wouldn't be listening to us, well, look no further and download SquadQL. It's the only mobile app you need to crush your friends and rivals this year. SquadQL recommends the best starting lineup for you each week based on your starters, your bench players, the free agents pool. And you're sitting there going, well, how does SquadQL actually do this? Well, the app connects directly with your Yahoo, ESPN, or CBS leagues, pulling in your actual roster and your league scoring system. SquadQL provides waiver and trade recommendations, plus the app gives you player rankings each week, and it's all based on your league settings. SquadQL truly is your go-to app this fantasy football season. Head to squadql.com to download SquadQL, your all-in-one fantasy football manager. SquadQL is brought to you by the creators of RotoQL, the leading daily fantasy lineup optimizer trusted by well over 100,000 DFS players. So you can also download RotoQL for free at both Apple and Android.
Next game is the Broncos and the Ravens. Honestly, not a lot of takeaways from me in this one, but I know one player who continues to show up on Dynasty sleeper list and a player that people continue to have faith in. I'm just not sure why. It's Broncos tight end Jake Butt. I'm just dropping Jake Butt from my Dynasty roster. He's tight end 25 on the year. The Broncos just don't seem to use the tight end much at all. It seemed like that was because a couple years ago they didn't really have any option. They've got Butt there now and are still not using him. I'm just dumping him. Matt, is that an overreaction?
No, I got no problems with that. I mean, unless it's obviously a very deep league. I don't think it would surprise any of us if they used a premium resource on tight end next year. Or like you said, they just don't use that position heavily. They got a lot of good receivers, and Keenum's not playing well either.
Mm. Dan, any holding out any hope for Jake Butt in Dynasty Leagues?
Definitely. I think this one's a little bit of an overreaction. I think Jake Butt was a high-end college tight end. I think he dominated that position, and I think obviously the injury really set him back a lot, and that's tougher to do when we're talking about the tight end position that already deals with so many injuries. However, I think, you know, we talk about maybe going after using a premium pick on maybe a higher-end tight end. The only thing really coming out soon is Noah Fant for your Devy folks. But honestly, I think Jake Butt is a premium resource. The thing that we have going on right now in Denver is Case Keenum is not playing well. You still have two aging, really good wide receivers in Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas. Plus, you have Cortland Sutton, who they just spent a premium resource on to get this year. So I think sooner rather than later, we're going to see a team without those two high-end wide receivers. And then looking at Sutton and maybe another big body guy like Jake Butt, and again, maybe spending more on the wide receiver position. But I think with the tight end position, it's fine to hold out a little bit of hope, especially for someone who's still in technically their first year of play because of injury or whatever it happens to be. I think Butt is still a hold for me pretty firmly. I'm not really recommend going and buying him now. I think if you were going to buy, it should have been early, whether it was in the offseason or, you know, the maybe week one. He's got a little bit of output, not a ton. Again, he's not really going to be a huge use. So this is more of a relatively deep roster, maybe 26, 27 plus, which I think is kind of the norm But I think once you get to that point, he's pretty easy hold.
So, Dan, you're definitely holding your butt then, right?
I'm a big fan of holding my butt.
Okay, good. Okay.
Next game, Bengals and the Panthers. We saw AJ Green go out with an injury, and that just opened the door for Tyler Boyd to really have a huge game. And after a couple of good performances, he's up to the wide receiver 19. We always talk about that third year wide receiver breakout. I think we kind of became impatient. Actually, I think we became very impatient, especially with young wide receivers. And Boyd ended up on a lot of waiver wires over the past year. So not anymore. Now he's a trade target. I'm believing in Tyler Boyd. I think he's easily the second best option in the passing game there. And if Green does miss extended time, hopefully not, Boyd is really a star. I'm going to give my late future first round pick. I'm a contender. I'm going to give that for Boyd. Dan, is that an overreaction?
I think it's very appropriate. I think we've had that little bit of time to wait. Those 3 years feel long. A little shout out to my good friend Nathan Powell. He was a Tyler Boyd guy forever, never left the bandwagon. But yeah, I think a future first is really the smart move here. You're locked in there as that wide receiver too for as long as AJ Green is there. And Andy Dalton has shown to be pretty competent this year. And even in the past, he's always put up decent numbers, it seems. He's not that high-flying, explosive offense, but we are seeing two wide receivers put up nice numbers this year. So I think this is an appropriate reaction, and I think Tyler Boyd may potentially be the future of that offense because I think he has the tools to be a one there.
I think you guys like Boyd more than I do, even though he's a Pitt guy. I'm rooting for him. I think he's a role player. I think he's a number two at best. I think that there's a lot of good receivers, you know, including Mixon and Eifert in that mix right now. And I don't think Green's going away anytime soon. And I don't think this is an unfair proposal. It's just, if I'm giving up future first, which I hate to do, I want somebody I think that has a higher ceiling.
Yeah, that's where I am as well, Matt. If for whatever reason this was the only deal I could make to get some wide receiver help, I do think it's a fair deal, like you said, a future late first for Boyd. But really exactly what you said. If I'm spending that pick, I'm aiming a little higher, maybe even looking to buy one of these guys who's struggling early on, but I feel can bounce back and still provide some upside. So I'm going to say overreaction, but that's a close one. Next game, Giants and the Texans. We saw Evan Engram go out of the game with an injury. Really feared the worst there, that it could be a potential season-ending knee injury. That's not the case, but he is going to miss some time, maybe even quite a bit of time. We'll have to wait and see just how much, but he wasn't off to a great start already this season. Matt, you talked about the struggles of Eli Manning and really that offense in general. Engram shot up the ranks a year ago after his big season. We know that came with Shepard and Beckham out of the lineup for much of the time. I'm going to pivot off Engram. I'm going to sell Engram for OJ Howard and a future third round pick. So O.J. Howard is currently the tight end 4. He's had a couple of big games already, of course, with Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Bucks. Matt, we'll start with you on this one. Moving Evan Engram for O.J. Howard and a little sweetener. What do you think?
If it was a second, I think I'd do it. A third's not enough for me to go because Engram is so proven already after 1 year. I don't think this will be Engram's year. But if we're talking big picture, I think he's going to have a very, very productive career. Although Howard looks great, but he's only caught like, what, 8 or 9 balls, I think, through 3 games. I mean, I do think he's going to become more and more of a feature player in that offense. And I like how that offense is designed. But Engram's too proven for me to make that move.
Dan, what do you think?
I think it's honestly an appropriate reaction. O.J. Howard was my tight end 1 over Evan Engram, still is from that class, considering all of that. Obviously, he's not tight end 1 in Dynasty for me, but I still prefer O.J. Howard to Evan Engram, so I would honestly make that swap straight up. I do love Engram's explosiveness. He plays more like a wide receiver, but I think O.J. Howard got a little bit more overlooked from, you know, his explosive standpoint. We're seeing these big plays come out of the Bucs offense, and he's taking part in it. He was kind of like a assembled, ready to go player coming out of college, just all the way across the board, fundamentally sound. And Engram kind of had some things he had to work on. He's still, you know, learning a little bit and getting a little bit better. So I think the ceiling is technically higher with Engram, but similar to the Odell Beckham take earlier that we might have to slide him down because of Eli Manning, I think that's also the case here with Evan Engram, because Eli is brutal and there are other weapons in that offense where I think this might kind of hinder Engram in the short term until we see maybe one of those guys, even though I don't really see it happening, one of those guys move out and Evan Engram having to move up.
This is another close one for me. As you guys mentioned, I do have some concerns about Engram this year, not only because of this injury, but even his usage and just the offense prior to the injury. I think I'm going to stick with him and call this an overreaction for now, but I'm one good Jordan Howard game away from making this type of move. And honestly, if we see another top five or six game from him, it might be too late at that point. Next game, Titans and the Jaguars. Another player that is pretty frustrating for me and maybe for a lot of people is Corey Davis. And similar to Engram, a lot of his troubles can trace back to that poor offense. We know they have had some quarterback issues between really just having to use Blaine Gabbert and of course, the Mariota injury. I'm going to sell Corey Davis for a future first-round pick. I'm just cashing out on Corey Davis for one random first-round pick. He's wide receiver 52 on the season. Matt, I know you've been a Davis fan. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, I am, and he's still getting peppered with targets. Right now that offense is highly dysfunctional. You said the word that he, you know, you described him as frustrating, which he absolutely is. So I would be calling up frustrated Davis owners right now and gladly offering a first for him.
Yeah, I'm in that same boat. I think this is a little bit of an overreaction. I think Corey Davis is still, you know, he's got every bit of ability. The only thing I worry about is, did somebody let Mike Mularkey back in that building? What is going on over there? Yes, the Mariota injury and having to play Gabbert, but this is a high end player. Honestly, he's got all of the tools, and I think with any sort of brain in that front office or in that coaching staff, I think we'll see him start to excel a little bit. We just need some health and something to be a little bit consistent out of the quarterback position, because we just don't have it quite yet. And hopefully we find that soon, because I will agree that Corey Davis is frustrating, but I'm not ready to give up on the talent yet.
Yeah. I'll say that's an overreaction as well. Not something I would actually do. And Matt, I agree with you. If we can buy for a first rounder, I'd be doing that. Maybe the player we should be most frustrated with, most disappointed with, is Mariota. The injuries keep popping up, and I'm just not sure he's that good, right? I mean, we haven't really seen it from him on a consistent basis, and at least in the early going this year, we're still not seeing it. The elbow injury, and even when he was on the field through the preseason and week one prior to that injury, he was struggling then as well. So maybe it's Mariota we should be looking to cash out on. Next game, 49ers and Chiefs. It's always fun to watch those Chiefs games with the offense. They did it again this week in the big win. But let's talk about the 49ers. Of course, one of the other big stories of the week is the season-ending ACL injury to Jimmy Garoppolo. We know the hype was there along with the player he faced on Sunday, Patrick Mahomes. Both of those guys were being drafted as top seven or eight quarterbacks in dynasty drafts this offseason. Plenty of people thought that was very aggressive, a case of just overvaluing both of those players. And it's funny to see how it's gone from, you know, from that point. Of course, Mahomes is now in the conversation as the quarterback one overall. And even prior to the injury, people were a little leery and maybe a little having a little case of sticker shock on Garoppolo as he struggled through those first couple weeks. So now his season is over. I'm getting out. I'm selling him. And I'm going to take any of these rookie quarterbacks. I don't think I can get Baker Mayfield. I'm taking him off the table. We talked about him already. But I'm selling Garoppolo for Rosen, Darnold, Lamar Jackson. Dan, is that a good idea?
I think so. I don't think this is an overreaction. I think it's very appropriate. I think it's crazy looking at this game and seeing the two different outcomes after week three. We now see Mahomes honestly being propped up into that quarterback one spot, if not the conversation, and then Garoppolo falling from grace. You know, it's kind of crazy how things work. But one of the other things I mentioned, and I like the idea of moving Garoppolo for one of the rookie quarterbacks, because now you're looking at age and more upside. But also, as a contender, if this was one of your guys, if he was your quarterback one, or maybe it's a super flex league and he was your quarterback two, taking Garoppolo and shopping him to a non-contender or someone that's maybe punting this year and seeing if you can swap for some points, get yourself back that edge that you once had with what we were hoping for Garoppolo going to be with the Shanahan offense and maybe some big points. But I think if you can flip him for maybe an older quarterback, maybe like a Ben Roethlisberger and a Philip Rivers, and add something on top because you're talking about the youth swap. So I think that's a good move, but I really, really like the idea of moving him for one of the rookies.
Matt, what about you?
See, I can't. I think Jimmy has struggled this year, but I also think that he is going to be a star, and I think that they're not done building around him. And the marriage between quarterback and play caller is exceptional. And I just think Darnold and Allen and these other guys are too unproven for me to do that, unless I don't have an IR spot and this guy's sitting there and I need somebody to start week to week, and you get in that, you know, bind from that situation. But I think in a nutshell or in a bubble, Jimmy's worth more than those other guys.
I think that's probably where I am as well. A lot of people after the Garoppolo injury heard some talk about McKinnon as well. And of course, that's the other big investment they made in the offseason. And he too is gone for the year. And I think those are completely different cases. At this point, we're not even sure what team McKinnon is going to play for next year, let alone how he might recover and perform. I don't think there's really any question that Garoppolo is the starter next season. And I don't think there's any reason we should doubt him. Now, if you doubted him before, if you were one of the doubters who kept him out of your, not only your top 10, but maybe even your top 15, if you wanted to see it first, well, you still haven't really seen it. So I understand that. But if you were on the bandwagon, I think you still should be. Might even be a good idea to try to buy Jimmy Garoppolo.
Future second? Does that get done?
Well, I wouldn't pay more than that. Of course, I wouldn't I wouldn't have paid a first if he were healthy, even in the offseason. So I would think a future second should do it. You might have to add a little bit onto that. Let's move on. The Raiders and the Dolphins. We saw some big plays from the Dolphins as they tried to come back and were successful in coming back and winning this game over Oakland. And some big plays from maybe some unexpected weapons here in the Dolphins offense. Albert Wilson, Jakeem Grant, a couple of their speedy wide receivers made some huge plays. Both of those guys responsible for two touchdowns in the game as they defeated Oakland. And both of those guys also sitting on a lot of waiver wires. Pick your favorite out of those and consider if you would spend 20% of your blind bid waiver money on either Albert Wilson or Jakeem Grant going forward. Dan?
So I don't hate this, because with the whole in blind bid, the whole FOB situation, if you don't use it, you lose it. It's not like it's going towards a future, you know, blind bidding or anything like that. So I think if you're in a spot where you can afford to spend 20, if you maybe haven't really been buying any of these other guys off the waiver wires this year, I think it's a good move. I think Jakeem Grant would be the one I'm going for. I see a little bit of Tyreek Hill there. Obviously, I'm not comparing the two. I see a little bit of the similarities within his game. And if your league, which it should, has special team scoring, I think there's a good opportunity there. Just for the kind of splash play here and there. Now, if this is a best ball league, I think spending more, assuming your best ball league has waivers, you're going to need to get more to get one of these guys, because they are the splash play types and guys that are perfect for best ball leagues. So yeah, I think this is an appropriate reaction.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And 20% isn't crazy. Like you said, it's, you know, you could cut them 2 weeks from now and that still doesn't cripple you if you spent 20%. I just have a hard time. And I've been a Wilson fan. I think he's been a good football player since day one. I think he's legit. And I think Grant does have some Hill-like qualities. But I don't know how I can't picture the scenario where I check the box on Sunday morning to start either one of these guys.
Yeah, that's fair. I do think Dan is spot on that these both are great plays or great guys to roster in a best ball league. But I also agree with you, Matt. It's tough to actually rely on either of those guys as an every week starter or really even a bye week fill in type guy. I'm still going to say it's an appropriate reaction. I don't think that's a ton to it to invest taking a shot on one of these guys turning into something. I like Wilson, but I think Grant would be the guy I would take. He's just a little bit more of the unknown, maybe a little more upside there. I think he's also younger than Wilson is maybe a tiebreaker there. So we all agree on that one. That's appropriate, but not necessarily something we're too excited about. All right, guys, we're going to pause here for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Next game, the Bills and the Vikings. The other big story of the week, of course, was the huge upset as Buffalo surprised Minnesota in Minnesota. A lot of that had to do with Josh Allen, almost 200 passing yards and a touchdown, 39 rushing yards and two touchdowns. He was the difference in that game and surprised a lot of people. I'm going to buy Josh Allen with any of the other rookie quarterbacks, Rosen, Darnold, Jackson, Baker Mayfield. I think everybody had those four ahead of Allen throughout the offseason, basically. So has he overtaken any of those for you, Dan?
I'm going to be honest. I almost closed my laptop when you said that. That's an overreaction for me. He's still easily in that fifth spot. I don't remember who it was. It might have been Rich Rebar. It called him milquetoast Cam Newton. I really love that take. I mean, he's explosive on the ground. It's kind of surprising for a guy his size. I think honestly, that's built into some of his upside. I think we could legitimately have one of those running quarterbacks that no one really talks about, kind of like your Alex Smith. I'm still not really in love with the guy. I think it's just one of those random fluky games that we see every year. But if you can buy cheaper than these other rookie quarterbacks, I'm in favor of it. But this particular case, I think it's an overreaction.
I mostly agree because, I mean, he was my last ranked of these quarterbacks in the real world coming out. I would not have drafted him. But that doesn't matter. You know, I think that like Cam Newton, he is built for fantasy production extremely well. And I think the Bills will build around him. He's going to have many, many starts before they actually pull him off stage. So besides Baker, I think he's my number two rookie just because he is built for fantasy production.
Whoa.
He's Cam Newton. He's very, very similar to Cam Newton.
That one shocks me, I have to say. We're usually lockstep on here, Matt. So I'm really surprised. Of course I was impressed with Allen on Sunday, and I can see, especially if he has that rushing floor that he gave us, not only on the touchdowns. We're not getting two touchdowns every week, but even the 39 rushing yards are some nice bonus points each week, but still to make him number two behind Mayfield is a surprise. I'm with Dan on this one. I think it's an overreaction. Still the fifth in line for me, but some room to move. I mean, Darnold has been mediocre. I'm not giving up on him. He's 21 years old with a pretty bad offense around him, but I don't think would be crazy if you moved Allen ahead of Darnold. The others, I'm not there yet. So that's an overreaction for me. Next game, Colts and Eagles. Andrew Luck, not good. Andrew Luck can't throw a Hail Mary. Andrew Luck, quarterback 22 on the season, Andrew Luck. I'm moving him out of my top 12 dynasty quarterbacks. We talked about these earlier with the Baker Mayfield ranking. So Matt, you already kind of gave us a spoiler on that one as you shared your Andrew Luck ranking. We'll go over to Dan. Is it an overreaction to kick Andrew Luck out of my top 12?
I think it's close to an overreaction. I think it's as close to an overreaction as you can get. The only reason you really can't is because the volume is going to be there. Andrew Luck is a volume scorer in fantasy football. You're not seeing him throwing 25 times. You're seeing him throw 45 times for the most of his career. And for what it's worth, I've never been a huge Andrew Luck guy, pre-injury, post-injury, whatever it happens to be. It's not somebody I've been on a bandwagon for. So I think I could understand sliding him into that 11, 12, 13 range, just looking at the landscape of quarterback right now. But just based on sheer volume, man, that's really, really tough to do because you know he's throwing it when he's out there.
Yeah, I mean, I already said, but I can make the case either way. If you're, I just think he's a special, special player prospect that could be number one on this list a year from now. So I'm going to hang on to him right in the middle of the 12 there. I think I had him at 7 or so.
I'm going to say it's an appropriate reaction. We already talked about the six guys that are holding down those top spots. We both agreed Mayfield, or we all agreed Mayfield is up there. And then you've got Stafford, Goff, Cousins. I think you have enough guys that it's reasonable to have him just outside the top 12. And I think probably when I update my rankings, I bet he's right at that 12 spot would be my guess. But I'm going to say this is an appropriate reaction. Let's move on to the Packers and the Redskins. Through 3 weeks, we've seen two big games from Adrian Peterson. I think he's been an RB1 in two of those and then had the quiet week two. He's RB7 on the season. I'm a contender. I need some help. Maybe I've got Le'Veon Bell on my roster or one of these other big-name running backs who is struggling. And I'm giving a future second rounder for Adrian Peterson. Very, very possible this could be his last season. Some people thought that might be last year, but here he is again. Is that an overreaction to give a second for Peterson? And not just the value, Dan, but the assumption that Peterson is going to be able to help me all year long as a contender.
Well, the price is what hurts me. I think he's going to be pretty consistent throughout the year. I think we're looking at something like, 60 to 85 yards weekly. We hope he finds the end zone. If not, in any standard formats, obviously that's doing just fine. The issue is the PPR upside. So I think the future second might be a slight overreaction just because we don't know what the future holds. Now, I will say that I've done this a couple of times, but those second rounders are almost guaranteed closer to the third than they are to the first. So I think if you can guarantee that it's a late second, I'm a little more okay with it. I think that kind of limits some of the upside you're moving in order to maintain this year at the running back position. And we're kind of all over the place with running back this year. This seems like the rebound year for quarterback and for wide receivers. So now running back seems like it's kind of taking a hit, and it was all like running back early and everything like that. So I think if you need running back help, you could do better, but this is a tough one. I think it's just a slight overreaction on the price.
I'm in on both sides. I mean, if I have Peterson, I picked him up for nothing and my team's in trouble, I'll take any second for him. And the other way around is if I'm a starter short or I'm a little questionable to running back position, and I think giving up what I hope to be the 24th pick overall in exchange for some money in my pocket at the end of the year, yeah, I'm in. I think Peterson's legit.
I'm going to say it's an overreaction, similar reasoning to my Tyler Boyd for a late first situation. I think if I'm spending a future second, which you can definitely argue how valuable that really is, I'm going to look elsewhere. Dan, you kind of said this as well. I'm looking elsewhere first before I just go flip that for Peterson. So I'm going to say overreaction just barely. Next game, Chargers and the Rams, the Battle of L.A., which was pretty easily won by the Rams. But we saw a big game from Mike Williams here as the Rams defense pretty much took Keenan Allen out of the game. We know Mike Williams was a first-rounder a couple of years ago in Dynasty rookie drafts, but he hasn't really done much yet. He's wide receiver 23 right now, so I'm buying Mike Williams for a future first-round pick. Matt, overreaction?
No, I am too. I mean, he was the sixth pick in the draft just a year ago. Good situation, showing up very well right now. Get him a year earlier than you would that wide receiver, you know, in next year's rookie draft. He's startable, I think, right now as well. A lot of talent, a lot of touchdown upside. I think that's very fair.
I agree with you, Dan. What do you think?
I think it's very appropriate. I think the price makes all the sense in the world. I will say that I think game script and scheme plays a lot into how he's going to do on a week-to-week basis. And I kind of lean back to it a little bit, but he seems more like a higher end best ball asset than just a solid regular asset. So, and I know we're not just speaking on one or the other, but I think we just got to kind of cover our bases. So I'm okay with Mike Williams for a future first. I think it's appropriate. However, if you're selling, I think you need to look beyond that. I think you need more than just a first based on what's happened. Now, if I'm selling, I'm probably just fine doing it for a first. But buy Mike Williams for a first. I can get on board with that.
Next game, Bears and Cardinals. One of my offseason crushes is not off to a good start. Trey Burton. I bought him everywhere this offseason. He's tight end 19. I'm just going to sell him. I'm getting out. And I'll take any future second-round pick. Dan, is that an overreaction?
I think it's slightly an overreaction. I think the pricing's not too far off from where he's at anyways. However, it's more on the quarterback for me. We talk about the other guys down this list where we were kind of worried about their quarterback situation. And honestly, for Trey, it's kind of in that same ballpark for me. I don't think Mitchell Trubisky is a very good quarterback. I think he can be adequate, but I think he's more of that game manager type. And I know everyone was looking at maybe this high-flying offense with Matt Nagy, and you know, you got Allen Robinson going, and maybe Jordan Howard's going to pick up the pace and Tariq Cohen getting more involved. And we're just not really seeing a ton of that. And I think a lot of it goes back to Trubisky. So I'd be okay with getting out if you're off the bandwagon, if you were never a fan. I know, Ryan, you were a big fan. I've always been a big fan of Trey Burton. I probably am not selling for a second, but it's pretty darn close to where his actual value's at.
Yeah, I agree. Really well said. I mean, I was about to say it's real short and sweet for me. If you think Trubisky's a bust, then sell Burton for a second. If you still have hope for Trubisky, then hang tight, because I think scheme and his role and his talent will make him worth every bit of a second.
And I totally agree with you guys. I'm not ready to give up on Burton yet, especially as really as ugly as tight end has been this season, with injuries to Olsen and Walker and some other guys disappointing. I'm not sure you can afford to give up a tight end without getting one in return. Burton has been disappointing, but he did give us one startable game and another just outside the top 12. So as rough as it is, probably need to hang on to guys like him. Cowboys and the Seahawks. This was an ugly game, but we did see a big game, a career best game from Chris Carson with 32 carries. He broke 100 yards for the first time in his career. He scored his first rushing touchdown. We know the other part of that story is the disappointment of rookie Rashad Penny. The Seahawks spent a first-round pick on him, and he's barely even getting on the field. I think he got 3 carries on Sunday after nearly turning the ball over. He sat on the bench for most of the game. I'm going to sell Rashad Penny, and I'm actually going to sell him for Chris Carson and a third round pick. Dan, please tell me that's an overreaction.
it's very much an overreaction. This beautiful community we live in harps on draft capital more than a lot of things. And this is no different than that. He's a first rounder. I think he's a special talent. I think he's a special pure runner from my point of view. Now, I don't believe he's he's maybe just mediocre in the pass catching game, but I think as a pure runner, he's as close to, you know, like an elite asset as you can be coming out. He's so smooth and everything like that. But Chris Carson was free. He's been free. And now if you can get out and go sell him, then great. But I'm not ready to give up on Rashad Penny for an unknown in Chris Carson. And yes, he's looked just fine and they keep feeding him. But I think that's has a little more to do with Pete Carroll's stubbornness than anything.
Dan, I totally agree with you. Definitely an overreaction. Not only do I not want to sell Penny if I have him on my roster, I don't want to buy Carson. But if you have Carson, you mentioned that you would look to sell him. What are you taking for him?
I think it's back to that that any second, honestly. I'm not going to get greedy. I think after a big game, you can look higher, but get out. I mean, he's free money at this point. And you know they're going to turn to their first-round running back at some point. They have to. Otherwise, they might as well just shut down the whole organization.
Matt, you agree with us?
Yeah, overreaction, but I don't want any of these guys. I think this offense is a nightmare. I'm not as big a Penny fan, I don't think, as you guys are to begin with. But it sounds like an ideal time to sell Carson and buy Penny, if that's what you're into.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Penny fan either. I don't think I have him on any of my rosters. But if I did, and if I was somebody who drafted him with an early pick just a few months ago, I certainly wouldn't be selling low based on what we've seen or haven't seen so far. Next game, Patriots and the Lions, Sunday Night Football. Finally, the long streak for the Lions that has been talked about so much whenever they're on a national TV game, failing to produce a 100-yard runner. They broke that with the rookie Kerryon Johnson, who got, I think he got 101 yards, and then they sat him down. They were not risking any kind of negative yardage play on that one. Kerryon Johnson, I'm going to move him up to my rookie RB2 rank. Of course, obviously behind Saquon Barkley. Matt, is that an overreaction or is that fair?
No, I think that's fair. I think that's an excellent offense. It's built for the long term, especially with the resources they put in the line, a good passing game. He's that nice blend of every down back and receiver. I don't think he'll get Ameer Abdullah where Theo takes all the receiving and Blunt takes all the touchdowns. I think he can kind of push those two to the side. I'm just a little torn if I'd rather have Sony Michel or Kerryon Johnson, but I think I'll take Johnson because I get one more year of him.
I think this for me is an overreaction. I'm still a fan of Geis. Yes, the injury hurts, and obviously with running back, we're looking for production now. Still want Sony Michel, still want Nick Chubb. I think the only guy he leapfrogs, which is an obvious one, is Ronald Jones. For Kerryon, I think this is a guy that I never really saw as great at anything, but also not bad at anything either. I think he's just kind of solid across the board. I think he can do most anything that you ask him to, but he's not going to blow you away. And now we saw a really nice game versus a pretty bad defense. So I'm not leaning too far on this one. I think I want to see him do it a little more consistently, and maybe against some better competition. Again, yes, I know we're playing the Patriots and it was the Patricia Belichick thing, but I think for future's sake, we need to see a little more consistency before we move him ahead of some guys that I think were much, much better in the draft process in college.
Yeah, that's fair. This one is another one. I guess I'm kind of in between on. I do think it's reasonable. It's appropriate. But at the same time, for me personally, it's an overreaction because, Dan, like you, I still want Chubb and Geis, and then Sony Michel is pretty close. So I'm not ready to move Johnson all the way up yet, but don't really blame anybody if that's the move they want to make. So I think it's understandable. I'm just not quite there yet. Last game, Monday Night Football, Steelers and the Bucks. Matt, your Steelers finally got that big win, but Antonio Brown had another okay game, right? He's just been okay so far, but hasn't shown us that Antonio Brown-like performance that we're used to. He's wide receiver on the 11 on the season, So definitely not a total bust by any means. But again, we're used to him being wide receiver one or two. I'm not even sure he's wide receiver one on his own team anymore. But in that game, we also saw Mike Evans with another big game. He's been a wide receiver one all 3 weeks so far, and he's wide receiver two on the season. I'm going to sell Antonio Brown, and I'm going to trade him for Mike Evans and a second-round pick. Matt, is that an overreaction?
Yes. I think this is the, quote, downtime for AB, and he's wide receiver 11. You know, like, this is as bad as it gets, and I don't think that that's a sign of things to come or he's a declining player or any of those things. It's just a small sample size, and Ben has missed him on a few occasions, especially in the Kansas City game. A second isn't enough for me to make that gap up, although Evans has been great.
I'm in the same boat. I see it as an overreaction. I think Antonio Brown's truly one of the most special wide receivers we've ever had the pleasure of watching play football. And I think Mike Evans has a little more dependency on, game script and scheme and who's playing quarterback. Now, if we see Tampa Bay give the reins back to Jameis Winston, now I'm really worried because we've seen how volatile that whole entire situation can be when he's back there. So I think we see Evans. Honestly, we see Evans' value going back down before we see it kind of maintaining where it's at now with Fitzpatrick just being lights out. And who saw this coming? So I'm saying overreaction. I'm hanging on to Antonio Brown here.
I'm going to say overreaction. I'll agree with you guys, but this is another one I think is really close. And with the age difference, I don't think it would even be that crazy if you prefer Evans even up, but maybe a little crazy. Matt, while we're talking Steelers, let's go back to Le'Veon Bell. We talk about him every episode. Of course, the latest news from Pittsburgh is that the Steelers are considering trading him. I know you mentioned earlier your schedule with the Monday night game is a little bit off, so I don't know if you've been around the team or the other media much. Any thoughts on this? How likely do you think it actually is that they get a deal done?
Yeah, I'll be at the facility tomorrow, so I don't have any real inside scoop, but I do believe that they're fed up with them. You know, enough of the jet ski videos. We don't want you back. Get on with your life. Go with your next team. And I don't know this for a fact, but I do believe that they're not only listening to offers, but they might be picking up the phones themselves and extending out to a few teams. But for those that don't understand, if a team trades for Lev Bell, legally, they're not allowed to lock him up long-term. It's not like a Khalil Mack situation. He becomes a free agent after this season, no matter what. Now, a new team that has a ton of cap space could transition tag him or franchise him, which would be very, very expensive, but it would give them a lot of time at least to work out a deal where other teams couldn't. And I think there's a handful of teams, or maybe less than a handful of teams. There's a couple teams that come to mind that I think would maybe consider it. And what about Tampa to try to win now? That one I don't feel great about. What about San Francisco with McKinnon out? And I would have felt better if Jimmy was around. Now I think the season's kind of a wash. But the three teams I think make the most sense, and all of them have a ton of cap space going forward, are Indy, the Jets, and the Bills. And the Jets and the Bills, I've been kind of saying all along, if I'm a team that just invested in a quarterback who we need to make his life much easier, and having a luxury item like Lev Bell to hand off and make easy throws to, that would make a lot of sense to even overpay for him. But I think all you're going to get back in return is probably like a third round pick, maybe a young player, something like that.
Yeah, it just continues to be a soap opera there. It seems like we're past the Antonio Brown drama, but this Bell story is not going away. Let's fast forward a few weeks. Week 10, he reports, and over that time, we've seen Connor basically continue to produce like he has. Not that week one 200 yard multiple touchdown game, but he's playing well. How do they handle that? I can see a situation where they just make Bell a weekly inactive. Is that crazy to think that way?
They could, and he would not get paid. They don't have to activate him onto the roster. He could still, they could just keep recouping $850,000 per week if they just move on from him. But if they're 8-1-1 at that point, right, and you know, let's try to win this thing, he gives you a better chance to win, and I think you become friends real quick.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So we'll continue to follow that. We appreciate your insight. And even more than that, we appreciate Dan Sanio joining us. Dan, before we go, tell all our listeners where they can find your work.
You can find me on DLF. We do the Dynasty Double Take there, as well as a duo article with Nathan Powell. That's the Devil's Trade Advocate. We do a lot of trade talk. And then on RotoViz Radio, that's the Dynasty Tradecast. And on Twitter, at FFDynastyDan. I'm sure Eric would want me to drop the salamander handle, but unfortunately, that's not active quite yet.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. All right. Thanks for joining us, Dan. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.